I actually like the Nexus 7 size, though. It's perfect because I can hold it in one hand and, well, we'll see.
Pick your nose with the other.
Yeah.
You can read and pick your nose at the same time and still turn the pages.
And turn the page. Ah, oh, crap. Get a Kleenex. Yeah, that's smudged.
Exactly. I've soiled my screen.
Almost live from across the USA. This is Late Night. Your hosts tonight are Joel, Barry, and Michael, the virtual Youper. Tonight, Michael can't see. Joel is agitated, and Wilson is hesitant. All that and more on Late Night. Cure him! And now, digitally gathering at the plush QRM studios in Southwest New Hampshire.
Before you die!
Here's Joel, Barry, and Michael! Welcome, everybody, to Late Night QRM show number 126 from the southwest corner of New Hampshire, where visibility was down to a few hundred thousand feet today in the terrible snowstorm that we had. I am Barry J.
And from the southeast corner of New Hampshire, where the whiteout conditions of the dusting were absolutely stifling, this is Joel.
And from the suburbs of Copper Harbor, where it's about 5 below, and that's without the wind chill, and we're under yet another lake effect snow, yada, yada, yada. I'm Michael, the virtual Youper, in the man cave with no Foley effects for once.
They were great last week.
At least not yet.
And the reason why Joel and I have been joking about the visibility, well, I don't know where Michael, do you want to get into your lake effect advisory story?
Well, do you want to relate yours first and then have me come in on it? Or?
Well, our lake effect...
Somebody say something. This is radio.
All right. We've got dead air. Okay, I'll get into it. We've been under, you know, one form of lake effect... snow advisory warning, whatever, like forever. It's just way of life here. And Wednesday morning, I'm woken up by the weather alert radio at 6 o'clock or something after I'd gone back to sleep. And is lake effect snow warning for, okay, oh, big deal. Okay. So we start out the day with lake effect snow warning. And everybody's thinking, okay, we'll just get our stuff done, yada, 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 as I said. Well, then it looks like it's all going to bypass us, and they drop it down to a lake effect snow advisory. Well, that's like spring for us, so yeah, okay, no big deal. And some of the more seasoned people around here are going, yeah, I don't know. Once they start calling for advisories, or worse yet, heaven forbid they say flurries, we're in for trouble. And I had firefighter class that night. Well, they haven't canceled class yet. We'll go. So I take off, and lo and behold, I get down to about... I get to the covered road. It starts snowing pretty good. Visibility is 100, 200 feet. I'm not too worried yet. Get down to about Phoenix, which is 22 miles from here, and I'm getting the occasional white out. But then it would go back to, you know, 50 to 100 feet visibility. So I just slow it down some more, and actually at that point, I'm recording the podcast that shall not be named as I'm driving, and I get, to Calumet-Laurium area, which is now about 10 miles, not even that, 5 miles, 5-7 miles from the class I'm making, and it's just 10, 20 feet, 50 feet, 10, 20 feet, 50 feet. And I start making the trip down the ridge to Lake Linden, which is on the south end of the peninsula, /island/ don't say it, Barry. and
I don't have
there's
to.
There's a very steep hill. There's a very steep hill down this ridge, and it's got lots of turns in it. And I get maybe a mile from Lake Linden, and it goes to complete whiteout. I can't see the edge of the road. I can't see to my left. I can't see in front of me. I can't see anybody behind me. I'm down to like 3 miles an hour, nothing. And it's not going away this time. So I go into my ambulance training, and we actually have to drive through this stretch from time to time under these conditions, and I slowly move off to the right side of the road where we have rumble strips. And I find the rumble strip, even through the snow, you can feel it. And I follow the rumble strip through the turns all the way down the hill until the visibility returns. Stopping would not be a good idea because the next person who decided not to slow down would have just rammed into my rear end. So I get to Lake Linden. Now it's this advisory that hadn't gone back to a warning yet, had dumped close to a foot of snow. And it's about 40, 50 mile an hour winds. I travel the last, half mile to the school, find a place just to dump the Jeep. I think I was probably in the front lawn of the school at that point, but I didn't care. I didn't think anybody was going to write me a ticket at that point. I come walking into the school, and there's two flights of stairs I got to walk up. And as I'm coming up the stairs, there's the instructor standing there in the hallway looking down at me. And he goes, "You know, we were taking bets on whether you'd even make it tonight." I'm like, "Well, you didn't cancel the class, did you?" He goes, "Yeah, but the conditions are." I said, "Well, think about what I do for a living. We're on the road when you pull the plows." Well, they got through about an hour and a half of class and finally decided that the whole idea was just pretty bad to have class that night at all and let everybody go. Well, at that point, the Weather Service had decided they'd made a mistake and had changed the lake effect snow advisory back to a warning. That lasted about 15 minutes, and then they changed it to a full-out blizzard alert for the two-county area. I made it back up the 7 miles to Calumet and decided it would probably be a prudent idea to get about a half tank of gas because I was down to the warning light in case the trip got a little longer than I planned going home. And I'm noticing as I come up to each intersection, I can't see the cars on the other side of the intersection. It's just nothing. I mean, there's cars over there, but I can't see anybody until I get into the intersection and I can see their headlights.
So there were crazy people just like you out on the road?
Just trying to get home. I mean, this is a population center of that part of the peninsula.
Wow.
And I get to the gas station. There's nobody there except the attendant. But I have to take a gas in the Jeep, and I think, oh, yeah, I've got this invoice to mail. I might as well do it from the post office here to get there a day or two earlier. Mm-hmm. I drive down to downtown Calumet, and I know I'm right in front of the post office. Literally, I should be right in front of the doors of the post office. I cannot see it.
Wow.
I can't see the stairs. Wow. I can't see the sidewalk in front of the post office.
That's bad.
And I'm thinking, this is not good.
That's scary bad.
It's scary bad. I do manage to find my way to the parking lot, which, of course, is not plowed. That's not a problem for the Jeep. Go trudging through the parking lot in the Jeep to the drive-up mailbox, throw my letter in there thinking, you know, this is going to be buried under a foot of snow inside the box in the morning, but whatever, it's in there. And I'm thinking, I'm still going to, you know, head home, just take it a little slower. Mm-hmm. I get about down through the downtown, make the right-hand turn, start heading back to US 41 North, and the visibility just plummets again, and my phone starts vibrating with text messages. And I'm like, well, what the heck? So I pull over to the auto body place, which I'm well acquainted with because our ambulances are frequent flyers after deer impacts during the summer. Pull in the parking lot of the auto body place, and I look at my text message, and it's one of my neighbors in Copper Harbor, a good friend of mine. He goes, "Yeah, it's still just light snow here. You know, I don't know what you're talking about. I think the Weather Service has got it wrong." Not 10 seconds later, he sends me another text. Holy wah. He goes, "The wind just shifted and I can't see my building next to my house."
Wow.
I mean, like, it looks, at first he thought the power had gone out and the building, because the building was all lit up, completing with security lights outside and everything.
And you couldn't even see the lights?
He couldn't see it. He couldn't see the lights.
Wow.
And he goes, "I can't believe this." He goes, "Is this what you're seeing down there?" And I said, "See what? I can't see anything." We get into this heated text discussion. And he's like, "Don't come home. Just don't come home." I'm like, "Well, I really kind of need to." And he goes, "No. We'll find a way to reimburse you. Just stay in Calumet." And I'm like, "Well, hang on a second. Let me give you a phone call. This is ridiculous typing back and forth text on the phone." So I call him up. I said, I can make it home. And he goes, "No, don't do it." And I said, "Well, actually, come to think of it, I really can't even see the street, and I'm only a little bit off of it right now. Maybe I'll just drive down to the ambulance station because I can sleep in the guest bedroom there." And he goes, "No, that's another 7 miles of the most dangerous stretch of the highway. We'll work something out." Well, at this point, I'm thinking he's actually making sense. And and when my wife hears this, she goes, "Well, yeah." Well, I hadn't talked to her yet. So she would have said the same thing to me. He just beat me to it on the phone. Well, the half mile, maybe 7 blocks from that point back to the American, where I did wind up spending the night, took me over 10 minutes. Wow. And I know every inch of that route. It was just complete whiteout. I was worried I was going to hit parked cars on the side of the road. You couldn't even see the road to the right of you.
Wow.
I got to the American. I pulled in, found a place to park it. And I pulled in between a couple of snowmobilers and their trailers. That way I figured if somebody came barreling through the parking lot, they'd hit them and not my Jeep. Came walking in the door with nothing but my backpack, my Swiss Army backpack with my computer and stuff in it, and my homework from firefighting class. I had no luggage. Right. And the girl behind the counter looks at me and she goes, "I think you're done traveling for the night." And I said, "Yeah, I think I am too." And I told her, "I'm from Copper Harbor. I'm not going home." And she goes, "Oh, gosh, no, I don't blame you." And I told her I had been in for firefighting class and I was a medic for Mercy. And, I just felt it was best to stay put. Mm-hmm. So they gave me a special rate for the night, which I appreciated. They didn't have to do that.
That's nice.
And during the course, they had put out this big pot of hot apple cider. And I'm not talking the powder mix.
Ooh, good
they
stuff.
They cooked up a batch of hot apple cider with cinnamon sticks in it. And they just kept refilling it for the evening. And there got to be more and more orphans coming off the street, including some of my coworkers from the emergency room just around a couple blocks away. There were people that only lived 2 miles from the hospital and weren't going home. It was
that. Holy cow. Jeez.
And I didn't know it until I actually got in the room. But while I was arguing with my neighbor about, I'm okay to come home, Kiwanis County declared a civil emergency, closed all the roads. There were 4 or 5 foot drifts. Cars were getting stuck, and they couldn't get the plows through. Eventually, it just pulled all the plows off, I think by 10 o'clock.
Wow.
And just said, you're on your own. We're not even going to try to clear this until the morning.
Yeah.
So that was, even by Uper standpoint, that was probably the most intense storm I've been through in a while.
Wow.
And storms are a way of life up here, but that was nasty. I didn't want to be outside my Jeep for any length of time at all. It was just 50 mile an hour winds and just gutting cold.
Jeez.
Holy cow.
What was how much snow did you get out of that? Do you know?
We only got about a foot.
We just got a foot of snow. Not much. On top of the 8 feet that are already there.
What are you boo-hooing about?
Now, some of the piles are now up. You remember those pictures I sent you from last spring where the piles are getting up in the second stories
over
the peaks of people's roofs?
Yeah.
We're already there.
Yeah.
We are already there.
Well, I've noticed a woman that has the Facebook Copper Harbor, I forget what it's called, but I became a friend of it, so I'm getting her pictures now, which are very, very nice. I noticed she's been taking recent pictures of people in the roadway because really there's no place else for them to stand. And the snow is like above their head on the sides of the road.
That's just a given. That's just a given. Last night we just had our standard snow advisory and the drifts in Copper Harbor and the anything other than US 41, you go down a road, if you don't have a four-wheel drive, you're in trouble because I was going through drifts 3-4 feet deep today, just going around town. You see one coming, you downshift and you gun it a little bit and plow through it.
Right.
Jeep doesn't care. Jeep goes, whoa!
Rattle, rattle, rattle.
Kind of spits out the snow on the other side and just keeps on going.
Meanwhile, you had a snow advisory, and here, the Boston stations were all reporting a blizzard warning and all this past week, and it was, depending on how this storm goes, we could really be dumped on. Everything's going to come to a standstill. You know, the school's all closed. Everything was canceled for the evening because of this impending blizzard that was coming. And
Snowmageddon.
Yeah, it was just like horrible. And, you know, the live reporters were out there ready to report and everything else. And we got a half inch of snow.
Yeah, literally, wait.
And of course, I immediately went on Facebook and I said, the power of the new snowblower again repels the snow away from our area. Well, apparently Connecticut and their parts of Massachusetts did get slammed.
Yeah, I think Hyannis the Cape got 2 feet of snow.
Yeah, but up here, yeah, a half inch at most. And I will tell you that that shear pin that I had to, or bolt that I had to replace on my snowblower, after spending about 4 hours trying to figure it out and couldn't find anything on the internet on how, you know, any guides to replace this thing, I finally called John Deere, and a very nice guy, and I can't remember his name right now, but he's the guy that goes and makes the stops around the houses, and he goes, well, you got to do this, and you know, he gave me some suggestions. He says, pull on it a little bit. Well, yeah, pulling on it didn't budget, and I could not, you know, I played with it for another hour and a half, and by this time our deep freeze had started to come in, and it was damn cold. Even though I was in the garage, it was damn cold out there.
Right.
So I tried another hour and a half, 2 hours, could not find any way. So I called him up and I said, look, I'm going to have somebody come up here because, you know, we've got an impending blizzard coming, and I can't be without a snowblower with a blizzard coming. Excuse me.
Yep.
So,
Where's the bumper?
Oh, wait a minute. Wait. Yes. We had.
Oh, he doesn't have a cue.
I was queued up for bottom gears. We had an impending blizzard coming. Oh, I didn't do bread, milk, and toilet paper.
Bread, milk, and toilet paper!
And so he comes up, and the guy goes, well, the guy that took the order goes, that's going to be one expensive shear bolt. And I said, I don't care. Have him come up. You know, I wanted him to come up, and I wanted to watch him so I know how to do it the next time. Well, he could come up that day. Of course, I was at work, and I couldn't get home, so I told my lovely bride, I said, look, follow him. See what he does. Take a movie of it. But apparently, it's not the easiest one to get to, because it actually took him some time to do it. And the secret is, as he said, you have to remove the chute for that one. Because the only way you can look down and see that you've got things lined up is if you look down the chute hole. And so, and then, because it's that back one, that's connected to the rod that comes out of the gearbox that's connected to the belt. So what you got to do is look, and then you actually have to get down there and actually move the belt pulley, which is not an easy thing to do. You can only move it a little bit at a time, even with the tension off of it, you know, the belt tension off of it. So that's what he says. You just got to keep doing that and moving it around until you see the old bolt, because they don't fall out by themselves. There's always, you know, the old part of the old bolts in there. And then he goes, oh my God, this is impossible, because he goes, you can't fit a hammer in there to tap the thing out. And he goes, he finally, I don't know what he did, but he did it through the chute, through the chute hole, and he was able to tap it out that way. And that's what he said. He goes, I'm going to invent a tool that just to get to the shear bolt.
A long rod that goes down the chute, so you're swinging the hammer on the outside and punching the bolt out.
And tap it out. And once you get that out, then putting the other one in is fairly easy. But now I know how to do it. So the next time, you know, the next snowstorm that I have and I break the next one, I'll know how to do it. But
probably won't break the next one because that was a new time, first time usage issue where you had the whole snow chute full of snow and then tried to turn it on.
Well, this one was a different. I don't know what caused this one to happen. The only thing I can think of is I was pushing the tractor too fast. Because I started watching and the snow was coming up and starting to go over the outside chute a little bit I realized, oh, you know what? I'm driving too fast. It's not keeping up. So then I started backing off, but I probably already stressed that bolt and I probably broke it because I was pushing it too much. I was plowing it instead of snow plowing it.
gotcha. So that's where the little tent house with the heater comes in, because then you can drive slow, drink beer, and snow blow at the same time.
That's right.
Have to go fast.
That's going to be on the list. But needless to say, of course, you know, it probably took him about 45 minutes to replace this thing, which isn't that expensive, but the ride up and the ride back is what's gonna make it very expensive, because they charge their travel time. And of course I live 50 miles away from them, and they said, how come you're calling us? I said, because you're the closest John Deere dealer to me. You know, what else am I supposed to do? So, but the guy was real nice, Amory said, and she gave him a couple cups of coffee afterwards, because it was bitter cold out there. And even though he was in our garage doing it, it was, you know, it was cold. It was like 2 degrees when I left for work that morning. And so I know the garage was probably in the low 20s, you know, with the temperature the way it was outside. But it's fixed.
That's pretty darn chilly.
Yeah, it's fixed. I know how to do it now. And be a little more careful. I'm learning every time I use the snowblower, I learn a little bit more how to snowblow with a tractor. So that was fun. So
I know what I'm going to get you for Christmas.
What's that?
A torpedo heater for your garage.
Ah. That would
Those
be nice.
Are nice.
Yeah, the propane ones?
Kerosene, and it fires up like it's a. You plug it into a wall, it has kerosene in it, and you'll hear a fall, but it just throws the heat out. And they're designed to be used indoors.
Oh, really?
Okay. Kerosene heater, yeah, kerosene heater would work too. A round kerosene heater like you got already, fire that puppy up in the garage, it'll warm it right up.
I don't have that thing anymore. It rusted out on the bottom. We never used it. It rusted out on the bottom, so we got rid of it. I had that thing. Let's see, when did I get that thing? I got that thing in 1984, and unfortunately, the last 15-16 years, it sat in that garage with all the weather, and the bottom of it finally rusted out. So
wow, yeah, that's something. You know that tray's replaceable, right?
Well.
It's a brown tray that the heater has four legs that sits on it. Next time you're getting ready to throw something out, let me know, because I typically can rebuild it.
Shut up.
I should have had another show note talking about rebuilding things in my washing machine.
Oh, really?
Thank you. Oh, what a joyous job that friggin' turned into. I won't jump out of order. I'll put it here at the bottom.
Oh, we're talking about it up here and about the... you don't want to talk about it now?
No, I can talk about it now.
Go for it.
I
don't
go for it. You're talking about it. Just put it up underneath.
We have...
the blizzard equals half inch.
Blizzard warning. Yeah, it's exactly. Well, let's see here. I went ahead, my beautiful bride and I... have a Maytag extra large capacity washing machine. And I got this genius idea. Well, actually, what it was, my wife was sitting in my chair, and I have this fairly nice blanket that she bought for me. And she was having some tea in the morning, and I think one of the cats jumped up and knocked the teacup over and spilled it. She has milk in her tea, so it's like, oh, you got to wash the blanket. Well, this sucker... but it absorbs water, must weigh about 75 pounds, 80 pounds, this blanket. So, and it sat in the hamper for a couple of days, and I took it upon myself like a genius to say, well, I'm going to go do some laundry. I'll wash this blanket. Ah, what the hell? I'll throw a couple pairs of my blue jeans in there, too.
Oh, God. And this bowling ball and these five pairs of sneakers. Exactly.
And a cinder block. And next thing you know, so I'm like, well, it's going to need a little extra detergent. That's what will fix it. So, because there's a lot of material in here, so I start letting the water fill up the extra large capacity tub, and you take the cap full of, we had, I don't know what it was, Armor and Hammer liquid detergent, and I dump it in there, and I'm like, oh, we're going to need a scoop of OxyClean for this, because my jeans are pretty ratty and greasy, and I throw that in there and put the blanket in and layer it everything around and around the tub, and it fills up.
Okay, wait a minute. So you put greasy jeans in with your blanket.
Yeah, I know. I was really thinking ahead. And so the tub fills all the way up and starts to do the, well I'm going to call it, it gave it its all to try and agitate. And it agitated like a racehorse for about two agitations. Well, you look at the center thing, because I had to hook the lid up. And it went zhung, 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 and then stopped. And all the water went from agitating to barely jiggle. I mean, it's just clothes sitting in a tub of water, and that whole center agitator just to sit there doing absolutely nothing. And I went, well, how the hell is it supposed to pound the dirt out of my clothes now? So I'm sitting there going, I just broke the friggin' washing machine. I can't believe this. So I thought, all right. So I'm like, I got to get the stuff semi-clean. So just like back in the olden days when you take your laundry down to the riverside, I shove my hands in the tube. I'm like, I'm not going to get my fingers ripped off. The stupid thing ain't turning anyway. So I start agitating it with my arms and hands and turning the laundry all around. And the tub would still spin. It still drained. It still filled. It just wouldn't agitate. And I'm like, well, it might be those little dogs. They got these little plastic dogs with teeth that swing out in the inside.
Yep, nylon.
Nylon. And I thought, well, wait a minute. I just put new dogs in this thing last year. I'm like, could have I stripped them? Yeah, maybe. So I get that laundry done. It all drains out. It's a little bit on the more soppy side, but I throw it in the dryer. Of course, I got grease stains now on the blanket from the blue jeans. So, of course, everything has to be re-washed. But we've got bigger problems, which is, all right, I got to fix the damn wash machine. So I went and I bought dogs. And then I start looking into it some more, and I went, oh, son of a bitch. I think I just blew the clutch off the transmission at the bottom of the washing machine. And I went, oh, for Christ's sakes, I've never done one of these before. I know about them, but I've never done one. Well, thank you, people on YouTube. So I look up changing the clutch on a washing machine on YouTube. And I look at it. I'm like, okay, I got to pull the motor and transmission. First take the pump off, pull the whole shaft out, and then buy all the pieces. Well, I call Jeans Appliance in Lowell. Great, great folks. I've bought plenty of parts for the dryers that I've rebuilt, and another washing machine was a pump. They had a clutch. I hadn't taken the old one out yet because I wasn't sure I wanted to have the new one in my hand first. $60 for the clutch and the dogs. I come back home after work, and of course it was a real crap day at work. The last thing you feel like doing is tearing the transmission and crap out of the washing machine, and you got to lean it on paint cans because it has to be at a certain angle to pull everything out, and it weighs... I think it weighs about this, has the same mass as Mars when you try and pull the transmission and the motor out all at one time or not bend the shaft. Put a new clutch in it. Got it all together. Put the new, and actually this, and I didn't put dogs in, I just put the new clutch in, and I look and I went, this ain't the same clutch. The one that was in there, somebody had already replaced with a commercial grade, and I had the residential. I'm like, screw it. A new residential's better than an old commercial. Put it all together. I'm all excited. I'm filthy dirty. I'm soaking wet. It's colder than hell in the damn basement. And I fill up the tub. I throw laundry all in. I'm like, yeah, I'm getting ready to go. I hit start, and the son of a bitch won't agitate still. It agitated a little. It kind of went, and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. So I take it. Now it's got it full of water and wet laundry. take all that shit back out. And I pull out the center thing again, and I look, and I went, oh, crap, it needs dogs, and it's the plastic guts. You know the actual physical twirly thing in the middle
right,
of the
right.
tub?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's got teeth on the inside of it. So I lift it up. I take it out of the machine. I hold it up to the light. Where there's supposed to be teeth is smooth as a Teflon frying pan.
Oh.
Well, that's for and I'm like, where the hell do I get one of these? Call Gene's Appliance. They don't have it in stock. And I went to PartsDepot.com.
Uh-huh.
Found one. Everybody else wanted. Yep. They wanted $50 for one at Gene's. They wanted $36 for it at Parts Depot.
Yep.
Wow. And they said, typically, you'll get everything in a day and a half. Or it's 3 to 5 day shipping, but they say you'll usually get it in a day and a half. They weren't kidding. I no sooner ordered it, less than 48 hours, it was on my doorstep. And so my weekend, well, actually it spread into the weekend, consisted of brake washing machine, fill with grease on inside of tub, ruin blanket, pull clutch, replace clutch, from commercial grade to residential grade, which technically is a downgrade, reassemble, refill with water, flood close, didn't fix, drain, tear apart again, and put the new parts in. Now, the thing agitates and cleans so damn good, I'm worried it's going to tear my clothes apart. It works. I've never seen a machine agitate so good. Yeah,
wow.
And I was saying to myself, wow, this thing ain't never worked this good in the 4 years we've owned it.
Wow, that's amazing.
We got it used. Jeez. Yep.
So PartsDepot.com.
So I know,
I'm going to have to check that place
parts
out.
PartsDepot.com. I'm telling you what, they send you a little fridge magnet that I got on the fridge. And if you're looking for parts for your stove, uh-huh. for your washing machine or dryer, microwave, range, they have it all. You just put in the serial number and they'll probably have it.
Jeez.
It's great, great. And the prices are awesome.
So it's strictly like home appliances or?
Home appliances.
Wow.
Well, actually, they do home appliances and what the heck? I think they do other stuff too. Like, you know, like when your stove upstairs.
Yeah.
Your gas stove there in the studio. Mm-hmm. What did you need? A thermocouple?
Yeah.
I think they sell those as well.
Oh. Okay. I'm going to check them out.
Although thermocouples at Lowe's are like $7. Arch Depot, man, I've bought timers and heater coils, and it's an awesome place. Got to know what you need. You know, do the research first. But yeah. It's an awesome place.
Wow. Okay. I will do that.
Say the wrong website, you know, without being accurate here. It wasn't Appliance Parts Depot. Where the hell was it?
Oh.
I want to go get the magnet. I'll be right back, fellas.
Okay.
I want to make sure we get this right, because these guys are great.
Yeah. Okay. We'll wait here patiently as Joel gets his magnet. Yeah, because there's been quite a few things that, you know, we end up calling somebody out to. Of course, we buy all our appliances at this one store, and it's a family-run store, and they're very good, and they maintain, they fix everything they sell, so it's very nice to have them, and they are, everybody's gone, it's just me.
No, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
My son asked me for an adapter, so I'm looking.
Oh, okay. But, so we usually, you know, we don't have any issues with, them coming up and fixing things, but it would be nice to.
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead. What is it?
Partselect.com.
Partselect.com. Okay.
Yep.
That's not the one I'm thinking of, but I'm still the internet's the place to go.
Yep.
Okay.
Partselect.com is appliance parts, and that's where I bought the. So I'm going to buy all my parts for appliances when they need rebuilt now.
Yeah,
that works. And they have all the exploded diagrams. They give them to you for free.
Oh, see, that's what I needed for my I needed more than that. Because it worked exactly the way I thought it worked without seeing the exploded diagram. I just didn't know how to look at the snowblower in the right way to actually fix it. Yeah. So anyway, that's cool. And you know, speaking of being agitated, I see Michael. Last week we talked about how agitating it was to be a tall person in a normal world. And Michael, I guess, listened to it between snow crunches. And apparently, you agree? Have you had issues?
Oh, gosh, yes. Well, not to the extent you guys have, but in some ways, yes, I have. I have actually unbolted the rails and moved them back in vehicles. Now, I've got, and everybody has this to some extent. I have a more advanced case. I have degenerative disc disease, mm-hmm. and degenerative disc disease is the number one reason why people lose height, because mm-hmm. uh-huh. you start losing the space between the discs, actually between the vertebrae. Right. The discs start deteriorating, and I compensate for it. It's not like I leave a subtle life because of that. Actually, mm-hmm. the best thing
Quite
to do for
contrary.
That, the best thing to do for that is actually get plenty of exercise, mm-hmm. build up yep. your back muscles. But I have lost a couple of inches especially over the last decade, probably. Mm. But when I was my oldest son's age, and hopefully, he's taking after his uncles, not after me, so I don't think he'll run into the same problems. But we were about the same height. I was just shy of, or right around 6'4" when I was his age. And, I had an extra long twin because uh-huh. I also hated having my feet hanging over the edge of the
hanging
bed.
Off the bed. I hate that.
The downside of that is go find, try to find sheets for extra long twins.
Yeah.
So, you're having to yep. hire somebody to sew extra sheet on the bottom of, especially for the fitted ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The long sheets are one thing, but for the fitted sheets, you wind up having to have those custom made. And before we moved here, I've got the frame up in the second floor of the man cave here. But we do have, my wife and I had a California king.
Mm-hmm. That's a shorter king.
No, it's not. Not and the queen is. The king is not.
Oh, really?
The California king is wider and as long, longer. If not longer.
Huh. No kidding, huh?
I never had problems with my feet, which is a good thing because there's a footboard. But I never had problems with my feet trying to hang over the edge of the bed on the California King.
Very nice.
And I'm hoping someday we have a house big enough, or at least put an addition on the house so I can set it up again.
Yeah. Well, speaking about being tall, I'm as I've probably mentioned in a previous podcast, I am going down to South Carolina to visit my sister and brother-in-law who have a place, a winter home down there, and it's near Charleston, and we're also going down to visit with my cousins who live just outside of Orlando, and we drive down to see them. It's about a 4-hour drive straight down 95, down 95, and then I forget what highway you hang a right on, and you're there.
Right.
But so I bought my tickets, and I did some searching, and of course, my wife has to drop me off at the airport. The best deals were out of Boston, but this time of year, with the potential of snow and everything else, she really wanted me to leave from Manchester, which is up in New Hampshire, a little closer, not much closer, but a little closer. And so I went and looked there, and the best deal was U.S. Air, and I get miles for U.S. Air. And so I ordered my tickets, and it wasn't too bad. I think grand total was like $209 round trip or something like that. But then as I'm going in there, they said, oh, pick your seats. And, first of all, they were talking about, you can get the, I forget what they called them, but special seats, And I said, oh, well, I'll get the special seats because, I'm tall, and usually that means a little more leg room, and I've got to do that, right? So I hit the button. I said, yes, I want to buy special seats. And it was $22. Now, unfortunately, it's $22 per leg, and I've got a stopover in D.C. both ways. So mm-hmm. I got to basically pay four times, one yeah. for each seat.
On well, the left leg and the right leg.
Yeah, there you go. So it's 22 around $22. For some reason, you know, depending, it might be a little cheaper, it might be a little more, but it's always between $18 and $30. And so I, you know, I chose it, but then I look at the, and I haven't flown for a while, so I pull up the, they say pick your seat, and I pull it up, and lo and behold, I said, this is very weird, because all the seats basically at the front of the plane are these special seats, and all the plane seats kind of toward the back and any seat that's like near the restrooms was not a special seat. And so I picked my seats, but then after I picked them and, you know, paid for it and everything. Oh, and all the exit row seats were X'd off. Like, you know, they're not yet given away, but they're X'd off so you can't pick them. Really? The bulkhead seats. So I get my special seats, and then I said, what's so special about them? Because it's like, it seems like the whole front of the plane is now special seats. And, here's the new ripoff. You know, you get your plane ticket. Oh, you want a seat that works? Well, that's a special seat. You know, it's no different than any other seat, except for it's up at the front of the plane. And they're charging you extra to, you know, oh, you don't want to sit next to the bathroom? Okay, well, then you're going to pay us $22 more. Oh, you don't want to sit in the middle seats? Okay, well, that's $22 more.
Yeah. Are you serious?
No. I mean, it's just like they nickel and dime you for everything. They're just like the cable company or, you know, the satellite companies or, you know, where all these little petty little charges. And by the time I got done doing that, my bill was like $329.
So much for 210.
You know, by the time they got the taxes and the fees and everything else, and it's like, wow. I said, this is freaking ridiculous. And still, I know, I'm pretty sure that the bulkhead seats and the exit row seats will become available 24 hours before the flight.
20 hours before you fly. When I flew out, I had to, I actually stayed at the hotel. Mm-hmm. When I was at my hotel, the minute it hit 24 hours before my flight, I made sure I was on their website clicking for the one of those seats to get more leg room.
Exactly. Now the thing that I'm worried about now is, you know, because it sounded like you can't get a chance to pick these seats unless you, you know, pay extra for a seat, which I did, and it's non-refundable. Mm-hmm. So no matter what happens, once you hit the button and they charge your credit card, that's it. That money's gone. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I remember last time when they didn't have these special funny seats, that when mm-hmm. the 24 hour before, you could pick those seats and there was an additional charge for those seats, which I gladly paid for because there's leg room there. So am I going to get charged yet again for those seats?
Because you already paid for the special seat. You already paid for special seats.
But these are special seats.
Oh, too special.
Yeah, they're X'd out. You can't get to the special seats until 24 hours before.
Right.
Yeah, I'm just, jeez. Yeah, I can see it. You know, it's going to cost me half a grand just to fly. And what?
$250 each way. Yeah.
Michael's showing me it's an interface. It's an adapter for an Apple adapter of some sort. What's it go to? It looks like
digital air adapter.
It's a 30-pin connector adapter to HDMI out for an iPad.
Ah, really?
No kidding.
My son has purchased some episodes of Walking Dead that are sitting on his iPad, and he wants to show them to his friend. He's like, where's the Apple TV, Dad? And I'm like, well, it's actually not on the property right now, but I have this handy-dandy adapter that provides HDMI out from an iPad.
Nice.
Oh,
it actually does work. Unlike some other Apple adapters. Speaks out, and I am an Apple fanboy, I'll tell you that, but some of their adapters don't work worth crap. This one does work fine.
Well, speaking
of
Apple.
Would that be an OWC adapter?
I'm sorry?
Is that an OWC purchase?
No, that's actually an honest to goodness
Apple.
Right. Okay. Apple Store.
Yeah, I could tell by the Apple packaging.
Yes.
And speaking of Apple, we have to say happy birthday to the Mac.
Oh, yeah.
Because last week it was 30 years old. That's when when it first came out. And I remember that during the Super Bowl in 1984, they had the infamous Mac commercial that...
The 1984 commercial with the sledgehammer.
Yeah, and that introduced the world to the Mac during the Super Bowl, third quarter of the Super Bowl. So,
I was living in Tempe, Arizona, and I was at a Super Bowl party, and I'm sure I had plenty of something other than beer at the time, thinking, boy, this is a cool commercial. And I was, although it was a pretty cool party, we were all geeks. So we're like, oh, yeah, cool, wow, neat.
Yeah. I was living in Maryland, I believe, at the time. Yes, 1984. Mm. I had just returned from Japan, and I was in Maryland. And I remember seeing that. The commercial just, you know, it made you, huh, what's going on here? You know, and it's, you know. And, of course, we just started 1984, and that was the big deal from the book 1984. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
they did a great job on that commercial. Still a classic. I mean, it's still an interesting one to watch. So happy birthday, Mac. And so, Michael, propane prices, what's going
on? Yes. Well, I told you I've been having some issues with regulators around here, and I think I got a handle on that. I found a effective way of thawing out regulators. We've had such radical temperature changes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, never got warm, but it got from cold to very cold and back again. That mm-hmm. I had problems with icing up on the regulators. Plus, the tanks are literally buried under snow,
right,
cap and all. So they're not getting the right ventilation. I have to keep digging them out. The tank behind the man cave here, I actually walk up on the drift and I'm digging down to the top of the tank to get the air vent and the regulator opened up.
Wow.
But the long and short of it, between the cold and the regulator problems, both places now are at about 20%.
Hmm.
That's not normal for me. I normally can get through an entire winter on a 500-gallon tank.
Yeah.
Right.
So I have between 4 and 6 weeks of heat left in the house. I have probably 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks at the current temperatures of heating in the office if I'm careful about it. Uh-huh. Have you looked at what the prices in the Midwest for propane are right now?
No.
No, sir.
Yesterday, one of the first of all, everybody's on rationing. The most feral gas will drop off in any tank is 100 gallons.
Wow.
Holy crap.
And the current price in the UP, in this part of the UP right now, is $8 a gallon.
Huh.
Holy crap.
Whoa.
It went from $2.20 to $3.50 to $4.45. 2 days ago, it hit $5.50. Yesterday, it was hitting $8 in the local area.
Wow.
Look in the news stories. I suspect something's going on here because it was all over the news for a day, and then all of a sudden, whoosh, it's gone.
Really?
People are panicking.
Well, I
and
know
they pulled it from the news.
I saw a news story about it. As a matter of fact, now that I think about it, was the Midwest they were complaining about it. Well, they weren't talking about the price; they were talking about the shortage, and they said that's because one of the things they were saying is all the farmers had bumper crops, but it was a very wet season, so they were using lots of propane to dry out the crops.
There were some transportation issues. In the meantime, you know, up in the oil part of the country, they're burning it off because they've got no way to transport it from the oil fields. But now there's a severe shortage in Michigan, Ohio, Illinois, all through the Midwest. I could be in a situation in 6 weeks where I'm going to have to drain the water and shut the house down.
Wow.
Wow.
I do not have a backup plan other than electric heat. And if we keep in the 5 to 10 below territory,
yeah.
I mean, right now the ice shelf from Copper Harbor is 5 miles out.
Oh,
So we're actually looking at potentially a freeze over of the lake again. When the lake freezes over, this gets the 5 below is balmy. When the lake freezes over up here, it'll be 10, 15, 20 below.
Yeah.
Easily.
And
so I've got some decisions to make real quick here. Now, I've got this potbelly stove still here.
Yeah.
Except that one is not house grade, though. I wouldn't be comfortable with that.
I was going to say, how about a wood pellet stove?
Yeah, I'm a fan of those, but that's not a minor installation.
I'd be drilling me a hole through the side of the house and putting in a power vent. That's your day, and a pellet stove, like Johnny on the spot. Sell some shit and go buy one.
Pellets, though.
Pellets are easy.
No, they're not. Not from here. What,
really?
The people that have got them need them. I mean, I'd have to make a trucking run to go get them, and it's not a short run. If I put a wood stove or a fireplace in, I could do that in a weekend.
Yeah, all right.
And there's plenty of wood. As a matter of fact, I'm sure I could dive into the reservoir of the wood that I've been helping to cut and split all year long. So
I was going to say, it's there. Now it's going to get used.
Not only that, two or three. Are they full size? I have a couple of piles around the property here that were just for such an emergency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They've been seasoning for 2 or 3 years.
Oh, there you go. So let me ask you a question.
They're there. Yeah.
Now, you're not near coal cracking country like Barry and I, obviously, being Pennsylvania boys, but what about putting in a coal stove? It's the same as putting in a wood stove, but you can throw coal in it and burns a lot hotter, a lot longer. But if you can get coal.
Well, actually, I can, only because I know the area. Coal is not normal up here today, but it was very common in the 1800s for the mines. There are piles. I know where to get it, but it's the coal that you burn up. The coal from that back then is like walking through old London in the 1600s. It's high in sulfur.
Yeah. It's not anthracite coal.
It's dirty. It's hot. It's really hot.
Bismuth coal.
But there's plenty of wood around here, and the wood's free.
That makes sense. I mean, when I put the coal stoves in, when Debbie and I were living in, leasing the house there in the other part of New Hampshire, I had put in 2 coal stoves. One was a pea coal stove, and another one was a nut coal. And the nice thing about a nut coal stove is you can burn wood in it.
Right.
So in a coal stove, you can burn wood. In a wood stove, you cannot or should not burn coal.
It's too hot. It'll burn right through or warp it or crack it. Getting back to your first suggestion, if I had time to plan this, I am a fan of pellet stoves. They work great. Mm. I've got a couple friends here in town that use them. Probably 80% of Copper Harbor heats with wood anyhow.
Right.
The lumber industry is one of the main industries up here, and they leave the tailings behind.
Huh.
And you just have to, it's there for the taking. You just go out there and you clean up the site after them. They actually kind of count on you doing it.
So you have a lot of sawmills?
They go and they harvest the big trees.
You have a lot of sawmills up that
here,
way?
No.
They
haul it down.
You got a lot of guys timbering, I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, there's a couple of mills up here, but most of it goes about 100 miles from here.
I was surprised you don't have a wood pellet manufacturing
facility.
Yeah, facility, because
they're talking about it, but they haven't done it yet.
Okay.
Got to remember, although it's all here.
Yeah.
The transportation to get it from here somewhere else is kind of expensive.
Okay.
And the population base is. I mean, again, the county is less than 2,000 people. The entire county. Right.
Jeez. Wow.
So, yeah, we would love it, but I don't think there's enough enough customer base to justify a plant.
Huh. Man, that is incredible. I wonder if that's going to start affecting our propane prices here, because I have two.
I think it's going to affect everybody. And as I said, there was a huge brouhaha about it for about 2 days, and all of a sudden it's all gone. You have to really dig for the stories. I do know there's a federal probe, but I also think that there might be some suppression here to prevent panic.
Huh.
And that's probably what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Government told them, keep it quiet.
Right. Well, they got to find out also where it is. Who's using all this? This isn't just because it's cold. Yeah, there was obviously
everybody's thermostat turned up. Right, it means you're going to consume it faster, but they should still have more than enough reserve sitting somewhere.
Yeah, most of the time.
Well, I can tell you, $5 or $8 a gallon is not an option for me.
Wow.
I'll rip nuts. Out the furnace and put in a fireplace, and as I said, I can do it on a weekend.
Yep. Yeah.
I can buy a brand new fireplace for less than the cost of a fill-up at that price.
Yeah, yeah, and start cutting trees down. I'll burn them green just to burn.
As I said, I have the God, why can't I think of the name of? I've been stacking them all. Not yards.
Cords.
Cords.
Cord of cords. Wood. Yeah, I've got a couple of cords of wood sitting around here, and I couldn't think of the name. I'll blame it on the Thimbleberry beer.
Yeah, I was going to say, the answer's in the bottom of that growler.
I've been working on that growler all week. It's,
wow. That, you know, I heard...
It's $10 a growler, by the way.
Wow, hell, really? It's cheaper to burn the beer.
Oh, God. So, I heard some nasty stories about the... this week myself about Wells Fargo, the first bank that is actually charging you to make deposits.
They charge you for everything.
Yes.
That's the bank that, after going through great details to tell them I was going to be out of the country, cut off all access to my account when I went to Ottawa. You know, you remember that from my trip?
Right. Oh, yeah.
You guys. And there were some old. They charge you if you don't use their debit card enough. They charge you extra fees on the checking accounts. They charge you extra fees on the savings. And the only reason why I dealt with this bank, and I feel sorry for the local people that work there. The local branch, they're the nicest people. And local is a relative term. It's an hour drive from here.
Right.
But let's see here. If you have to transfer something from savings to checking to cover a check, I think that was $12.
What?
Oh. Yes.
What?
$5 a month just to maintain savings. I forgot what it's like $500-$600 a year in account fees is what it winds up to. My wife was just livid about it.
Do they not want to be in the banking business for people? I
don't know what the problem is, and I've been a long customer. Before it was Wells Fargo, I was a first Interstate member, so I've been with the bank for like 30-some-odd years.
Wow.
The only reason why I was still there was with that other job that I had. That was the only way they could get me money, and Wells Fargo made it very difficult for them to transfer money from one Wells Fargo account to another. To tell you how bad Wells Fargo it is, I would go in to cover a check.
Yeah.
I would deposit $100 cash. Cash I'm depositing.
Uh-huh.
They had it posted overnight. They wouldn't credit it until the next day.
It's cash.
Cash.
It's cash.
They would not accept cash as a deposit for that day. It had to go through the processing
system. Oh, my God. Goodbye.
Yeah, so long.
You know, I haven't been paid by this other company since September, and I finally... What triggered it was I had forgotten that my Skype account was linked to that debit card.
Okay.
And I was talking to my wife on my Skype out account, and it had an auto-renew on the card, and I forgot about it. Triggered. That $10 auto-renew cost me $50.
Oh, jeez.
And I'm like, that's it. If I repeated... late night is not enough to pay my
you need to go find yourself a nice credit union somewhere.
Credit union.
I have a good credit union, and even more important, we have a good local bank.
Ah, okay.
That, they have been incredible. The credit union's been great. I deal with the credit union from the college, but Superior National Bank is owned locally. And I wish I'd gone there in the beginning. We've been checking out the local banks, but it's the only locally owned bank that's left.
Right. Wow.
And we ran into a bumpy.
Yeah, that's the only problem.
The people that own it don't need to sell it. So I'm hoping it stays that way for a while.
Yeah.
These people remind me of when you listen to Adam Curry and John Dvorak and they talk about Mechanics Bank in the West Coast. Mm-hmm. These people remind me of them. We'd given up in trying to get an addition on the house because nobody wanted to finance it. And I'm like, do you have any idea where I live? And I didn't even ask Superior National. And they were like, oh, by the way, anytime you want to put a, you know, addition on your home, just let us know. And it's like, I don't have any verifiable income right now. Well, that's okay. We know where you live.
We know where you live.
What do you mean? Well, you live right next to so-and-so, and you have, like, 3 acres in Lake Fanny Hole. That's enough equity for us. If you want anything to guarantee something, that's about as good as it gets. And I said, I've got no income. And they're like, well, you're a paramedic up here, and we respect that. We want you to stay around. And like, holy
wow. Well, that's the kind of bank you want to deal with. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they have worked with us. They know we're going through rocky times, especially right now. And they're like, yeah, just hang in there. It's okay. Yeah. It's like, you're not used to hearing that from a bank anymore, you know?
Jeez. Yeah. It's the old...
Oh, and if they have to transfer something from savings to checking, I think it's $2.
Wow.
The cover of the paper.
Oh, you mean the automatic one? Yeah, the automatic...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because online should be free. Just click, 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 and transfer money over.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, it is free online.
Yeah.
Unless it's Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo charges you to transfer stuff, especially between accounts.
That's crazy.
That's amazing, yes. Bye-bye.
So, anyhow, yes, we went there yesterday, and the first thing I did is, again, the local people from this bank, they're wonderful. I think they should be working for another bank. The bank manager was at the front door. It was a busy day. He was at the front door greeting everybody.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, opening the door for people and came in. What do you need to do? And I said, well, sorry, but actually we need to close our account. He could see the pain look on his face. And I said, first of all, I want to thank you for everything you've done for me because I really appreciate the way you've gone out of your way for us. But we live in Copper Harbor. And he's like, oh, we're not exactly local to you. I said, no, we're not. And I said, and the only reason why I really had the account was that my past employer, that was the only way they could pay me, was through your bank.
Right. Well, we kind of went through the same thing when we left Lake Sunapee, which is a local bank up here, although it's growing and it keeps buying other banks. And as it got bigger, all of a sudden the fees started picking up. And, you know, it was they were starting to nickel and dime us. And you know, when we went in, we were very familiar with the people, the local people at the local branch, and they're very nice. And we the same way, we went in there to close it, and they said, oh, what, is there anything we can do? I said, well, no, you can't, because you're getting too big now, and you're starting to nickel and dime everybody. And I said, I can't afford that. You know, it's just, I can't see paying too late. I mean, I had to pay $8.
It's 5 and 10. It's not nickel and dime.
Well, yeah. It's like I was paying $8 a month on my checking account for service fees. And I said, what services? You don't even explain what services I'm paying for. It's just, you just pull $8 out of my checking account every month. You know? Mm-hmm. And yet you've got my money and you're making money on my money because you're getting the interest. You're certainly not paying me any interest.
They're getting 6% interest per day on your money that they lend to other banks to close out their books by the end of day's end of business, but they don't pass that interest on to you. They charge you to make money with your money.
Right.
Which is asinine.
And ATM, any ATM I used except for theirs, cost me money. Now, with the credit union, they belong to these credit union things. So if you go to another credit union, it doesn't cost me anything to take money out at the ATM. It's nice. And my ATM, matter of fact, if I have to go to someplace and they charge me $3, the ATM credit union reimburses me the $3. How they stay in business, I don't know. But... I've learned my lesson. I'm sticking with credit unions from now on.
Yeah. Same here.
Yeah.
I've done that for years. Yeah. And, you know, I've never been done wrong by having that. I've got one credit union I've been with since I was 16.
Yeah.
And another credit union that I do my everything else with.
Well, I still have one credit union that I still have a little bit of money in. It's the one I used to use all the time. It's, Tower Federal. It's located down in Laurel, Maryland, and it's one of its main branches is on Fort Meade, right next to a building that you've been seeing quite often in the news, and it is the official credit union for that building. So they do a lot of overseas work too, and I still have it open, but it just got to the point where being up here in New Hampshire and them being down in Maryland, it was. You can do it, but it was just, you know, it's nice to be able to walk into a local branch and, you know, we had to do everything over the phone and it got a little more complicated than I wanted it. So we're in a nice credit union now and we're real happy with it. So, hey, you know how we all watch, we have Apple TVs or we have Roku boxes and we stream stuff and we watch it and. It's neat. Well, I kept hearing this thing. People keep talking about setting up Plex media servers. And so I finally looked into it a little bit. And lo and behold, you can download the server for free. And it's multi-platform. OS's. Mm-hmm. So, in other words, they've got it for Windows, of course. They've got it for OS 10, and they've got it for Linux. And so you just download the software, and I've downloaded it on my Mac Mini up here, and it pops up in your web browser. It pops up an interface, and you answer a few questions, name your server, and boom, you're off and running. You tell what directory to look for all your media, and then you can, from any of the other client type apps that are out there, or from a browser on your machine, on any of your PCs, or your Roku box they have on there.
Wow.
You can click, and all your media is right there for you and available. And if you pay a little extra, they have a fee, then you can start actually accessing it outside your home. And so for the first month, it's free. But after that, and it's not bad. I think it was like $29 for the year, $29.99 for the year. Or if you wanted to, you could pay $79.99 for a lifetime membership. Or it's $3.99 a month if you want to go that way. And that just gives you the ability to access it, you know, outside your home. They have apps for both Android and iOS. They're $4.99 a piece. However, if you sign up for the service, then you get the Android one for free. So I've got it working here, and the Roku one is free. And so I put it on the Roku box, and sure enough, boom, I'm serving all my movies that I have in there. So I'm making the little Mac Mini with the external 2 terabyte hard drive. That's my little server too. And I can share it with you guys. Yeah, sure. Matter of fact, Joel, I sent you an email. I don't know whether you had a chance to look at it.
I saw where it said Plex. I just haven't set it up yet.
Okay. But you should be able to try that right in your browser. All you have to do is sign up for a free account on Plex, and then you should be able to actually stream from my little Mac Mini with whatever it sent you when I said, send this to Joel. I don't know what it sent you, because right now...
We'll find out.
Yeah.
It sent me an email. I got an email from Plex.
Yeah. Yeah. So... Of course, I didn't see what it was because it asked me for your email address. I gave it to him and invited you to be able to access my Plex server. But it's really cool. Yeah. It works very well. It was very easy to set up, and the price isn't bad for being able to access your stuff everywhere you want to, and also share with your friends. So.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, I figured, you could give it a try sometime. And, I've got some stuff that's up there that you might.
Yeah. See what we can see.
Yeah. And, and you can let me know how well it works. So
yeah, I will do that.
Yeah. And Michael, I will send it to you. I don't know how good your bandwidth is, but I can give you the same invitation, and you should be able to stream from my little Mac Mini, my old little Mac Mini that's sitting here. It's so powerful.
We'll give it a try. I'll be right back, guys.
Okay. Sure.
Okay. So, but yeah, I was real impressed. It was real easy to set up. And the whole thing is it's multi-platform, so that's kind of cool. You know, not only can I watch it on my Nexus 7, I can watch it on any of my iOS devices.
That's cool.
I can watch it on the PCs, or the MacBooks, and the Roku box. And even though they don't have an official app for Apple TV, they have a way that you can watch it on the Apple TV, which I did. Yeah, it's kind of interesting what they do.
I'm back.
Okay. They have a bunch of scripts that you can download in GitHub. And what it does is it goes and on the Apple TV up at the top, they have the trailer, what they call the trailer fix or app. And that's where you see all the – you can click and watch all the trailers. Well, it hijacks that what you do is you go in Apple TV and change your DNS for the Apple TV to point at the machine you set these scripts up on. And what the scripts do is they hijack the trailer information, the trailer app, and put the Plex media up in there. So instead of seeing movie trailers, you see the Plex stuff that you have on your Plex server.
Nice.
But they also have a channel there with the movie trailers. So they make them still available, the Apple movie trailers, but it comes through them.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked real well, too. I don't see the reason why you need it because I've got, you know, anything in iTunes that I have in iTunes I can play on the Apple TV, so I don't see a real need for having Plex on there, although it does give you a couple. They have a few, when you pay for the premium one, they have a few other channels on there that they make available, kind of like what Roku does, and that may grow in the future. I'm not sure.
Right.
So those would become available on the Apple TV. But what I did was I know where, you know, of course, I have all those my programs in the Apple TV, in iTunes, so I can watch them on Apple TV. And when I set up the Plex server, I told the Plex server, oh, here's where my local stuff is. It's in the iTunes folder. So they're actually working off of the same folder for media. And and it works great. It's working great. And I'm real impressed with it. And it streams 1080p. At least locally, it streams 1080p. It'll be interesting to see what happens if you decide to stream it. And you can also set up, if you've got media, it can download it to your iOS or, I believe, Android local device, so you can watch it offline if you're traveling on an airplane or whatever.
No kidding.
Yeah. So, it's pretty cool. And, you know, like I said, I don't know whether it's open source or not, but the guys that are doing it are making it dirt cheap to get into it. And they do say, please support this because they really work at keeping it up to date. And it's a very good project. So check it out. It's Plex.tv is the webpage.
Definitely give that a looky see.
Yeah. Really, really happy with it. And apparently a lot of people are using it now. So, and I was, after using the Nexus 7 now for about a month, I guess. I guess it's been about a month, yes, pretty much. One of the things that irritates me with it is the keyboard that they have on it is pretty crappy. And when I say that, when I'm trying to type on it, a lot of times it double types a letter, or it types two or three letters at the same time, or it'll double type of space, and I just got to the point where I was sick of it. You know, I said, this should not be doing this like this, and you know, and I know one of the big things Fandroids talk about is the ability, well, if you don't like the keyboard you have, you can always download another keyboard. And of course, being an Apple fanboy or an iSheeple, I go, why would you need any other keyboard? The one that comes with it works just fine. Well, that's true in the Apple-based one. You know, it just works. The Nexus 7 one was lacking. So I went and I did a little research, and I ended up with one called the SwiftKey. And I got to say, I downloaded it. It's free for the 30 days, and then I think I'm going to have to pay for it. So I'm trying it out. Mm-hmm. I think it's only like $4.99 or something like that. It's not too bad. Actually, it might be cheaper than that. It might be $2.99. I like it. I like it a lot. First of all, it's not making the same mistakes. If you do the hunt and peck thing, it's not making those mistakes that the other one does, the default one does. You can do the swipe motion type thing, which I found was kind of interesting to do. It takes a while to get used to it, but you basically put your finger on the keyboard and you just swipe between the letters, and it does a pretty damn good job of figuring out what you want to put up there. The first thing it does, by the way, is it asks you permission. It says, do you want to log in with your Google Plus and Gmail account? It's the same thing. And what they do is they go through it and learn how you write, how you normally write, and the words that you use most often, and blah, 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 blah. And so if you give it permission, it goes through your email account, your Gmail account, it goes through your Google Plus account, and it just basically goes through everything that you've written, and then it knows how you talk, and it automatically adapts to you. And that was pretty cool, because it was pretty much dead on. I mean, one of the other things it has that's really good is the key. They have a key, so you can tap it and you can do voice dictation. And the voice dictation works better than the Google voice dictation. I don't know whether they use Dragon or not, but I'm telling you, I tap on it and I'm talking. And I even said like Anne-Marie's name and my wife's name, and it spelled it right. Correctly, I said Barry Furnival, and it typed my name, and it's all because it already knows everything can learn. So I'm very happy with it so far. I've only been playing with it for a day, but I highly recommend SwiftKey so far for anything Android based, and and pretty much it does the same thing the Apple keyboard that's built in does.
It's hard to say that, isn't it? I have Android friends that really do like SwiftKey, so I haven't tried it myself, but they swear by it, especially on a phone. If you think it's bad on a Nexus, it's even worse on a phone.
Oh, I believe it, because that keyboard is just...
So they need it.
Pitiful. I mean, and there's sometimes where I'm just getting close to the screen, and all of a sudden it goes... you hear it go pop, pop, pop. I'm like, I did not type three keys.
So. Although I'm having that problem with iOS 7 on my iPhone 4.
Really?
I have that.
By the way, Joel. Joel.
Yeah.
Joel.
What?
Darth Vader.
Darth Vader. Move the microphone.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, I was just sitting here reading an article while you guys are talking and. I didn't realize the mic had slid down my face.
Yeah. Anyhow, yeah, I might have. It could be an issue with my iPhone 4, but I have noticed in the last month that I get my finger anywhere near the screen. I don't have to touch it, and it's taking. It's tapping.
What?
And it's getting very annoying. But I think it's. I don't know if it's a software issue or a hardware issue, but it's selecting stuff without me even touching the phone.
I think my iPhone... Let me ask you a question about your iPhone 4, because I think mine that I use as my backup in my sleep time phone
Yes.
Is slowing down considerably now. And it could be that mine's just wearing out. But I noticed that it is not responsive to taps.
No, it's that. Did yours auto update to? Let me see what version. Mine updated to a version that I didn't even realize it updated to. It's not. Everybody, close your ears. You're not hearing this because we're running special test software under certain circumstances. And it's if you reboot it, it comes back to full speed for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. It's the very thing that they're working on. But we're also running test versions of that, and I am running Aboot. What's the Aboot here? I am running.
Are you Canadian?
7.0.4.
Yep, that's what I got now.
7.
Okay, well, I'm running 7.0.4 beta. And it does slow down at times, especially the one it does the worst job at slowing down in is Downcast.
Yes.
I'll hit a button at Downcast, yes. And it just sits there.
Yes.
But that's not normal, Joel. This is an iOS 7 issue.
Because the other thing is my home key is
these
not.
These things shall pass.
My one and only button key, home key is almost like, you know, press it again. Nothing happening, and finally it reacts to it. And I'm not having any problems with my iPhone 5. iPhone 5, I don't see anything like that. It's just the old iPhone 4.
Well, Joel's got the 4S, though.
I got the 4S, but I'm running the same software you are, Michael.
Okay.
Well, not the beta.
But you do have a much faster processor than I have.
Right, but it still hangs.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that iOS 7.1 will resolve some of these issues.
Okay.
So when's that coming out?
Soon. They're on beta 4.
Soon.
Yeah.
We'll talk about this after the show.
I am not acknowledging, nor am I accepting, nor breathing right now.
I can neither confirm nor deny that they're working in this day and night.
Well, let's put it this way. If you listen to any technical podcast, they're already announced that they sent it out to developers, you know, the version 4 of the beta, 7.1 version beta 4.
Yes, I can never confirm. Right. I can neither confirm nor deny that I've received numerous beta updates.
And I'm not saying that I can neither confirm nor deny that I get the email messages that say there's an update available, a beta update available to me. I'm just telling you what I hear on other tech podcasts, what's available.
Right.
So,
I think especially the network that should not be listened to anymore.
All right. Let's see. Oh, yes. Yesterday. No, that was wasn't yesterday. It was Thursday. I was driving home, and I got to Saltell Road, which I consider like the road into my neighborhood. And And I was going. Yeah, I'm going slow because it was actually snowing a little bit. So, you know, I was taking my time, and I'm going down. Wow. I'm going down, and not only that, but the frost heaves are out, and they're bountiful. So Saltell Road happens to be one of those frost heavy roads, and so I was taking my time, and all of a sudden I see blue lights behind me, and the spotlight.
Whoa!
On Saltell Road, I said, what the fuck?
You know, I said, on Saltell, that's right down the street from your house.
I know. I said, I am not even doing 30 miles an hour. You know? So I pull over, and of course, you know, I wait, and the guy comes out, and it's a younger cop. I get, well, they're all younger than me now, I guess. But,
they all look like they're 12.
Yeah. He goes, sir, he goes, I just wanted to stop and tell you, you know, you got a tail light out. And I said, I do. I said, geez, which one? The right one? He goes, yeah. I said, yeah, I have problems with that one.
Wait a minute.
What?
That's an LED tail light.
No, it's not all LED. And the newer ones are, but my year isn't. So,
oh, okay.
But I had a problem where it would go out. Like if I go over a bump, that tail light would go out, and then you go over another bump and it comes back on. So, but anyway,
that connection issue there.
Well, I think I got that fixed actually, because when I got, of course, the guy says, "Look," he goes back to the car with my registration, my license, and then he comes back. He goes, "Look," he goes, "I stopped you. You know, I radioed it in." He goes, "I have to give you, this is just a warning." He goes, "You can do whatever you want with that. You can rip it up right now if you want. I don't care." He goes, "I just really wanted to stop you and tell you you had an out, a tail light out." So I'm, thank you. My tax dollars at work telling me that my tail light's out. That's one of the few things that my property taxes go to pay. But needless to say, I got home and I got, and actually I am thankful that they told me, because otherwise I'd never know. But I got home and I asked Anne Marie.
What? Wait a minute. You don't pre-trip inspect the lights on your vehicle once a week?
Well, I do on the ambulance every day. But.
I do on my car once a week. I'll turn the lights on and go all the way around, make sure they're all still working.
How do you check the brake lights?
Very. No, that's easy. Brake lights, just turn on your four ways.
Flashers, yeah.
Oh, flashers use the brake lights?
Yep. Yeah, they use the same element.
But my flashers are yellow.
Oh. Turn on, but your flashers are yellow, but so still turn on your emergency flashers. And your yellow lights flash in the back rather than the red, correct? So your brake lights, there's one method that I've used where I use the ice scraper.
Stick
it on the front of the seat.
Oh, I did an easier one when I pulled into the garage that night. I said, "Is my right tail light out?" And Emery goes, "Yes." And then while I was still in the car, I pressed on the stoplight. I said, "Do I have brake lights?" And she said, "Yes, the brake lights work." Marker light that was out. So I went and looked it up, and thank God for, again, YouTube. I know it's real easy, but it was even easier to type in 05 Prius taillight replacement. And, about 15 YouTube videos came up, and they quickly showed you. I said, that's freaking easy. So, I stopped at the local auto parts place and got the bulbs. And the guy looks at me and goes, "That doesn't look like it's the right size for a taillight." I said, I looked at it. I said, "Well, that's the one they showed in the video, the YouTube video." I said, "Believe me, they're small.
YouTube's never wrong.
They're small." And I said, "It's got this thing out, and then you pop that in. You just kind of snap it in place." And he goes, "Okay." Well, he goes, "Keep the receipt, because if it's wrong, bring them back." And I said, I thanked him. But, I replaced it this morning, and it was the right one. It popped right in. And I truly did have a blown bulb, because when I drive, even during the daylight, I drive with my headlights on. It's just a safety thing with me. I just leave them on, because my car is smart enough to turn them off. When I turn the car off, my lights go out, so I just leave my headlights on all the time. And that means my taillights are on all the time also. So I blow through those. But yes, I think the signal lights are LED on my model. But the taillights are a standard light bulb. And I don't know what, I think the backup lights and the brake lights. The brake lights might be LED. But, there's like 15 bulbs in the back assembly. So, and I finally got myself a work light. I used to have a work light that took a standard bulb. I don't know where it is.
Yeah, a drop light.
Yeah, drop light. And frankly, standard bulbs are getting hard to find these days. So I stopped at the old...
Don't get me into that.
I stopped at the good old Harbor Freight on the way home and went in there, and I saw the fluorescent one. I said, that's okay, but that bulb looks like it might be tough to find to replace. And then right next to it, and it wasn't that expensive, was an LED one, like your standard thing. And it had like a whole panel of LED lights. And I said, I'm getting that, because even if I drop it, those LEDs aren't going to break just be, you know, from a drop. And the frickin' thing will last 15 years, probably even longer, without a single element going out. So I picked up one of those, and boy, yeah, nice and bright. And works in any temperature. Well, yeah, I don't think it'll work in temperatures above 120.
But. Probably. Well, it actually should still work.
I think that's what they said on
the work better cold than they do hot.
Yeah. But unlike the fluorescent lights, and if you're out in a cold place, it doesn't. You're not sitting there waiting for them to warm up and to light, you know, to get brighter.
Yeah, because that weight was so horrible, and it was. Listen to you. I can't stand that weight. Not like you had time to go cook dinner and come back and the light was bright. It only took 3.5 extra seconds.
No. The CFL ones?
Yeah, the CFL ones. I got out in the garage.
They take 5-10 minutes up.
Yeah, I was going to say, in this weather, the garage ones take 5-10 minutes to they come to full brightness to warm up. As a matter of fact, those are going to eventually get replaced with LED lights since they're getting... The LEDs are getting cheaper and cheaper every day.
Speaking of that, did you catch that as of January 1st, they can't make any more 60-watt bulbs?
No, really?
I mean, 60-watt incandescent bulb, why?
Well, that's one of those other submarine bills that's been through. You know, that the 175s are long gone.
Huh.
Each year, they cut back what the maximum wattage of the light, actual wattage, can be. And as of January 1st of this year, they can no longer manufacture 60-watt bulbs. So what's on the warehouses and the shelves? I'm serious. That's why you can't find 175s anymore. So if you want a 60... they're submarining you, and you don't even know about it.
The incandescent 100-watt light bulb, you're saying you can't walk. They're not making them anymore.
They're not making them. You can buy them. But that's only what's in warehouses. And once they're gone, they're gone. The largest size they can build this year is 40 watt or less.
The 40 watt's a joke. You can't see shit.
Right.
That's why you got to buy
it. It's called,
I'm planning on building some fixtures that hold, like, you know, 8 40 watt bulbs.
Well, I got the fluorescent ones, whatever they're called.
Yeah, so do I.
CFLs all over the place now. But I have an LED one that I bought for the light by my chair, and that thing is great. So from now on,
I want to convert to LEDs.
Yeah, yes. These CFLs, by the way. Yeah. Oh, these bulbs will last 10-15 years. Yes. Well, the bulb may last that long, but the starter element at the bottom doesn't. And I have replaced at least 5 or 6 of these 15-year CFLs after about 3 years of usage. I mean, I think a standard light bulb lasted longer than some of these CFLs.
Plus, they're hazmat.
Yes, because they got mercury in them.
Yep.
Yeah. So I know we have to call the hazmat team at work if we break a CFL or fluorescent light, and they cordon the place off, and they come in with their masks and suits on to clean up what stuff that they used to hand out to us in elementary school, and we used to play with the little beads.
Used to play with the balls of mercury across off the desk.
We used to hold it in our hands and go back and forth.
Hands are rolling around.
Yeah. So, but apparently, now we got to, Anyway.
Don't even get started on the let's all jump up and down and about the hype of the BS. It's just another way of making money.
Yeah, and I hate to say this, and maybe I'm bad about doing this, but also at work, we've got these special containers for batteries, and you have to throw the batteries out in the special container, and you got to log
it. We got one of those, too. It's called a trash can.
You got to log, the battery, type, and, what you're throwing out and stuff at work. So I found any batteries that I need to replace at work, it's much easier just to stick them in my pocket, go home, and toss them out in the trash when I get home. much easier. Now, yes, I know some greenies out there will probably say, do you know what you're doing to the landfill?
Oh, my God. Do you know you're causing global warming? Oh, fuck you. You know
what? Putting That's these rare elements back in the ground where they came from in the first place.
Exactly. Now they're not so rare. Thanks to me, they're not so rare. They're out there. You just got to look for them.
Excuse me. I've got to go spray some aerosol into the atmosphere now.
Absolutely. And excuse me. I'm also going to use this old car battery as a boat anchor every time I go fishing. Just tie some rope onto it and shuck her off the side. Our boat don't float away.
Oh, God. Yes. Welcome to the green team. From telling Michael, just burn wood or wood pellets or even good old-fashioned coal.
Keep exactly. Your house warm. Put in a coal stove. Let's burn it.
I know where I can get some plutonium rods for you.
I got some depleted uranium. Let's make some bullets out of it.
Excuse me. Oh, God. So I was surprised that I got an email notification on all my podcast sites, which are all WordPress sites, and it said, "Hey, we automatically upgraded your site with the latest version of WordPress." And I said, "Wow, I didn't know it even did that for you. Usually, you would just, you know, when you logged in, it would say there's a new version of WordPress available. Do you want to upgrade?" And then, you know, they made it quick and easy to do that. But now they just send you an email and say, "We done." We completed it for you. So I was kind of happy for that. As long as, of course, I immediately went in and checked that the sites actually worked.
Are my links still good?
Yeah. Everything seems to be okay. So I guess it was successful. So, okay. I think that's about all the tech news I have this week. And it was more more personal tech talk this week, but that's okay because that's the tech that we deal with every day. So
yes.
And now Michael's going to tell us a bedtime story.
Yeah, no, something like that. Well, I was going to try to sneak this in before, and I didn't speak up fast enough. Oh. But I'm trying to think what night it was now. I think it was Monday night. We had just gotten back to the house, taking care of stuff, and I was in the kitchen actually about to cut myself a piece of chocolate cake. Mm-hmm. Every time I hear chocolate cake, like since I've been a kid, I think of Bill Cosby now and his talking
yep.
about
chocolate cake. Can we have the chocolate cake? Chocolate cake, chocolate cake.
That is great. Anyhow.
It's got eggs, it's got milk, it's got flour, it's got three of the four food groups. Eat
right.
It.
A good friend of mine in town, his name is Clyde. As a matter of fact, he did some of the intros for the old Virtual Youper. He woke up like 2 in the morning one night this week and said he had a craving for chocolate cake. So he baked a chocolate cake, except that he really supposed to be eating it. So he had one piece and he gave the rest to us. And it is awesome. It's awesome. And he makes chocolate cake with a coffee base. He makes a pot of coffee, and then he uses that to bake the chocolate cake with. And oh, my God, is that good. But and so anyhow, I'm in the kitchen. I'm about – it's about 9:30 at night. I'm about to cut myself a piece of chocolate cake. And I hear – almost simultaneous, I hear the sound of breaking wood, you know, snapping, shattering type – board and a couple of thumps and a large whoomp, something hitting the floor. And I'm like, well, this isn't good. So I'm immediately in paramedic mode here and just kind of, you know, paramedic, you walk with a sense of urgency, but don't run to assess the situation. So I'm walking through the door about the same time my wife is coming from the living room. And here is my youngest son laying on the floor of the bedroom with shattered board all around him, kind of stunned look on his face, and his whole forehead is red and swollen.
Oh.
He was climbing into his bunk bed, which is the top bunk, climbing the ladder holding the post in his left hand and the side rail in his right hand. And the whole side rail, both supports, everything shattered right off the bed, which put him in an awkward position where he came down face first into the side rail of the bed.
Ouch.
And then fell to the floor.
Ow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, how's your oldest son who was in the bottom bunk? No,
actually, he was in the top bunk of the other bed.
Oh, okay.
There are two bunk beds in that room.
Right, right.
Anyhow, so jeez. Other than being surprised, he was fine. So I did the head to toe trauma assessment and checked my son's forehead, which was quite swollen, but. He didn't lose consciousness. He did have a bit of a headache. He was a little bit nauseous. We watched him for a while.
Right.
But he does worse as far as accidents with snowboarding and mountain biking.
Okay.
So I'm not laughing at all. No, you understand, yes. So I cleaned up all the slivers, pulled the bed apart, you know, get everything cleaned up. He's like, well, it's obvious you're not sleeping in the top bunk anymore until this gets fixed.
Yeah.
And my wife's like, well, what are you going to do? I said, well, I guess, you know, he can sleep in my bed and I'll sleep on the couch again. I did that for years. So I cleaned everything up and swapped things around. And it had been a very long day for me. Actually, it might have been Sunday night because I think I'd spent a full day on fire school that day. So I, long story short, they're watching TV on the couch and I'm tired, so... I've been sleeping in the top bunk of this bed without any side rails for all week. I got to fix that soon before something happens.
How many sets of bunk beds do you have? You got
two.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Remember the size of our house.
It's small.
It's small. It's a one bedroom house. So
right.
we call it the Upper Dorm. Two sets of bunk beds in there.
You got two sets of bunk beds, and both your sons sleep in separate bunk beds.
They sleep in the top bunks, and my wife and I sleep in the bottom bunks.
Oh, okay, okay.
That's how it works.
Oh, man, you were lucky you guys weren't in the bottom.
you do what you have to do. No, he didn't fall through. Hmm. He fell between the two beds on the floor when the side rail comes.
Okay, I understand now. Okay.
We almost had one of those situations that the top side rail of one of the beds split a year ago and almost collapsed onto the bottom bunk, which would have been me.
Oh, jeez.
That's all been rebuilt. Yeah, we're looking forward to the day when we can put, like, this addition onto the house.
Uh-huh,
actually have separate bedrooms.
Yeah, the addition that'll be larger than the actual house itself.
Well, probably double the size of the house.
Yeah.
Bring it up to the size of the garage here.
Yeah.
This garage has twice the square footage of the house.
So let me ask you.
As a matter of fact, people have patterned this house, the people have patterned their houses after this garage.
Well, let me ask you an interesting question then.
Yes.
And why don't you live in the garage and have your office in the house?
The house.
You know, that actually was considered, but remember from last week how long it took me to walk from the garage to the house?
Yeah.
Yeah. About 3 days.
The septic system's at the house.
Okay. Okay.
Getting water to the garage isn't a big deal.
Yeah.
The house, the garage is very close.
Silly me. We know what the bathroom facilities at the man cave is.
Well, again, I can get water, no problem. But I am so close to Lake Superior, a septic system here is a big deal.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. I do want to do it someday, but it's a $15,000-$20,000 addition to this garage.
Right, right.
To put a septic system in here.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's so, the same price here.
That's really the reason.
The septic systems are the same price here because now they have to meet certain requirements, and we have to put sand hills in now. You can't really put a septic system in the ground. It has to be almost above ground, at least the leaching part of it. And you're supposed to get them replaced every 15 years.
Right. Right. Plus, all the pumps and everything theoretically have a finite life in them.
Right.
For the engineered systems. But no, this is an 1,800 square foot garage, two story building, mm-hmm. and they make a very nice house. They've used this very same footprint to make houses in the harbor.
Wow.
But it's not. It doesn't have running water, and it doesn't have a septic system.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, I have a great hassock in the other room, but
yeah, not just yet. You got your new bank. They might turn around and say, you know what? Why don't you put a septic system and running water in that and turn the garage into the house? And now you have two houses, and you can rent one out.
That was one of two though. The house is sitting on Lake Fanijo.
Oh, yeah.
The view is worth sleeping on the couch. For me, gotcha. I mean, everybody has different values.
No. If you're going to spend some money, you know, you go and put the addition on the house. That's
right.
That's
my friend who built the house in the first place. He built this house with an addition in mind. It's the mm-hmm. everything's laid out on the property. Even the construction of the house is set up to build an addition on it.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Yep.
I just want
question
to
get into it.
I'm confident.
Yeah. That would be cool.
Well, I would like one of these investments to pay off that I've been spending all this time on.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That kind of money.
Absolutely. That makes complete sense. That makes complete. You know, you got to plan accordingly, and when all the little ducks finally stand in a straight line, then it's time to go.
Yep.
Yeah. So, cool. Well, you know what time it is? It's time for another edition of Bottom Gear.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Late Night QRM Bottom Gear. I'm one of your hosts, Joel, and today I'm going to tell you a little story about how I'm getting way too intimately knowledgeable about the electronics of a 1994 Oldsmobile.
Oh, God. An Oldsmobile we'd like to call Wilson.
Wilson, which is my $600 banger car that I bought in the peak heat of the season, only to discover that it didn't have air conditioning, that it was broken last July when you were still cutting your grass with a push mower in 1,000-degree heat.
Remember those days?
Yes, I do remember
100-degree weather, not -5.
Yeah, and you were using the push mower on the back 5 acres, and I'm just like, I'm waiting for the phone call any day. What's the matter? He had a friggin' heart attack from the heat, but which I was hoping I never got, but I was waiting for it.
Yeah.
Well, the car ran great then, and it's developed a miss, and it's a reoccurring miss. And I thought I had fixed it, and I did fix it at one point by doing a tune up, and it has since with this stupid polar vortex cold winter that we've had, you know, and I know everybody's experiencing it to some degree. Well, maybe not Florida, but exactly. When you go to start the car up, and I looked at the thermostat, and it's 4 degrees below zero, not including wind chill. You run outside to go start the car. And I swear to God, and I don't mean to be gross, but all the snot in my nose froze instantly from the steps to the car, became solid. And that's just from breathing. And I'm like, oh God, open up. And I'm taking a Zippo lighter and I'm heating the key up. So when it'll fit through the hole and unlock the door. And the car would start and then stall and then start it again and then it would stall and then it started again and it would stay running. But it's since then, I think I had a couple of fuel injectors that were on their way out. Of the 6 fuel injectors that are in that car, I think 2 might be on their way out, the coils. And in classic 3.1 liter V6 design, you talk about a pain in the ass to try and change these things. You've got to pull the whole plenum off the top of the motor.
Drop the train.
The mass airflow sensor. just to get to the fuel rails. And this is not a job you do when it's 1 degree outside. So I am riding and biding on borrowed time because I don't have a spot where I can pull the car in where it's warm to do this job. And I've been trying to diagnose it. I had another neat thing for you folks. Whenever you get that check engine service light on, and I had one on, and I conveniently fixed the service engine light on the dashboard of my car with a piece of black electrical tape. You put it right over top of the light. So it doesn't glare in your eyes while you're driving and you ignore it. So that was for...
Oh, I was going to say, did I ever tell you, speaking of idiot lights, did I ever tell you on my, I understand that since they have taken this out of the Prius, but my Prius has an idiot light that comes on that tells you that the roads may be slippery, and it's based on the temperature, and it comes on at 37 degrees.
Nice.
So basically, in New England, you know it's on all winter long.
All winter long. I saw that light on your dashboard when we went to go pick up Chinese food.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, look, it looks like a little snowflake and then some squiggly lines and a picture of a guy or a little car and his little head hanging out of a sunroof.
Yeah.
It was,
Yes.
But, I saw that and I thought, oh, so it's telling you that the road's wet. It happened to be crazy cold then, but
that's my spring detector, actually.
When the light goes out,
it's spring.
So in the last, let's see, just before we had our last polar vortex, the day before when it was a balmy 21 degrees outside, I changed the EGR valve on the car. And Michael, you came to mind because I'm thinking, I'm such a pussy because he's out on top of Rockaway Mountain when it's like negative 300, changing a windmill on top of a 50-foot boom friggin' pole thing, trying to pull cables and fly a kite all at the same time in the dark. And I'm here whining
with
about
no headlights.
21 degrees. Exactly. And I'm here whining about 21 degrees underneath the hood going, this sucks, this sucks, this sucks, this sucks, I'm cold.
Well, I'm the one that hired somebody to drive 50 miles out to tap out a freaking
in a garage where he's out of the wind. Oh, my God. I honestly, God, I'm sitting there, and I did the EGR valve, and as soon as I plugged it in and I hooked the battery back up, which reset the codes, the light went off. I'm like, yes! And it lasted for one whole day. And then all of a sudden, I friggin' miss where I'm driving. I'm like, why the hell is it missing? I tuned it up, and now I'm at the point where I'm like, no, I'm at the, do I shotgun random sensors at this thing? Throttle position sensor. Idle sensor, mass airflow sensor, cam sensor, coils. I already bought coils, all three. Three never go bad, but I'm like, screw it. I'm replacing all three of them already. They were cheap on eBay, brand new. Ignition control module, or do I just go straight for the injectors? And realistically, I'm thinking it's probably an injector issue. They're prone to have those issues. But it's too damn cold for me to fix it. Today it was 40. I should have gone out there, but I was being lazy.
Wow.
Didn't do it.
Does it change with what position your foot's in?
So believe it or not, it does. In other words, when you start the car up at an idle, when it's ice cold, it will idle fine. When it starts to get warmed up, and as you're driving with the car, and if you really step into it and hit passing gear, it'll buck, which the ignition control module tells the fuel injectors when to squirt. And it does it all six at a time. And they're supposed to read 11 to 13 ohms of resistance when you ohm them out. I don't know what the hell mine are because there's no way in hell I was doing it today because I was being lazy and it was cold.
Right. But on temperature affects the resistance anyhow. So
yeah. Exactly. So when it's this crazy, crazy cold snap came through, it was running shittier. When it was warm, I'm going to say when it's 20 degrees and warm, it runs good. So I'm thinking I may end up having to take the old car to the garage and pay somebody to do something that I easily could do on my own had I had a place to do it, which bugs me a little bit. That's pretty much the Wilson issue. Besides that, it was running great. And I was all kinds of almost conceited when people say, oh, my God, I got to make another car payment. It's $350. And, oh, my God. And I'm like, yeah, my car's been paid for half a year. But now it's running bad, so people are making fun. Although I have gotten a lot of compliments on it.
Ten years here.
What's that?
10 years. 10 years without a car payment.
Oh, nice.
That's
maintenance. Maintenance is one thing, but I've had both cars paid off since 2004.
Right. I mean, and the thing is you can save a lot of pennies in 10 years of what you would have spent in car payments from when the tranny does need to be replaced or when the motor does need to be replaced.
And speaking of that, I do tell you that the 9-year-old, it'll be 9 years old this year, the Prius. And this week was the first week I ever had to, I bought gas on Tuesday, and I had to buy gas again today. I've never had to do that before.
What?
I'm only getting...
Because that gas engine's running a lot more because of the cold.
Well, that's what I'm hoping, but I'm thinking maybe the batteries are starting to age. Because I'm only getting 40 to 41 miles per gallon right now. But between the cold weather, the fact that the engine runs more because it's cold and also to supply heat.
Bingo.
And the fact that even though the batteries are on the inside of the car, so when you've got the heat going, they warm up the temperature. There's many, many hours where they're at a very extreme cold temperature. And so
extreme cold temperature.
Which
and cold batteries.
Efficiency.
Yes. Yep.
Right. Their efficiency. They're not going to take a charge the same.
And also not to mention.
They're not AGMs.
And not to mention that my car has never done well on the winter mix of fuel.
I didn't mean to walk all over you. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say I normally drop about 5 miles per gallon just on when they switch over to the winter mix.
Yeah. I think I commented on that a couple shows ago, but you also, that very statement you made then and the one you just made again now popped into mind as well, because I have been able to definitely tell that gas, the grade quality of gasoline has significantly changed with this cold weather.
Yeah.
And for the winter mix alone, winter was one, and it seems like it's extra crappy now.
Huh.
I don't know if condensation's getting in the underground tanks or what.
Oh, that could be too. I didn't even think about extra water in the tank. And the other thing too is my gas tank. From what I've been told, my gas tank has a giant plastic bag in it. Okay, and so
it's a bladder.
Bladder. And I've noticed in the cold days that when I'm filling up the tank, it doesn't take, it'll click off at like 6 gallons instead of, and I know it's like a 12 gallon tank.
It's a whole six. Oh my God.
I know it's got a 12 gallon tank and I got to sit there and feed it in. And they say, well, that's because the bladder kind of freezes up. It's cold. And so it doesn't expand as full as it does in the summertime, so you can't put as much gas in the tank.
Are you feeling the same empathy that I am, Joel?
I'm all tore up about his 6 and 7 gallon tank and his 41 miles to the gallon. When I'm driving my friggin' pickup truck and I get 9 and it costs $127 to fill it up.
Hey, come on.
That's with the cheap gas.
It freaking cost me $25 to fill up today.
Oh, my God. $25 used to get my truck out of the driveway.
Cost me $18 round trip to get my kids to school and back. One trip.
Really? Okay, that would last me a week.
Really?
That would last me a week, 100 miles a day.
let me... Just to put things in perspective, while we've been doing the show, fellas, mm-hmm. and for all seven listeners that are going to laugh, and some of our Canadian brethren who may be listening to this show who are also fellow podcasters, I say this. I'm looking at a truck right now while we're doing this show on Craigslist, and I looked at the MPG of a Ford 6.9 liter diesel, and I said, oh, it gets 11 miles to the gallon. That's not bad. And that's what I said in my head. For a one-ton F-350 dually diesel. I'm like, oh, 11 or 12, that's pretty good. You know, and you're here whining about 41 miles per gallon.
I'm not used to tanking up twice in 1 week. I said, say it ain't so. Twice in 1 week.
I'm used to tanking up once a day when I drove my Tahoe. You know, I'm looking at doing diesels because I'm like, you know what? I consider 16, 17 miles to the gallon good.
Wow. Even I got to admit, I found since I don't often drive my wife's RAV4 and when she was in the hospital that week, I was driving it a little bit more. I always wondered what this display button on her steering wheel was, and lo and behold, I found out, oh, look, it tells you the temperature, and what's this? It's average miles per gallon, and miles per gallon, you know, current real-time miles per gallon. I said, wow, I didn't even know this car had that. But I put on the average miles per gallon, and she's getting about 27 miles per gallon in the RAV4.
For a four-wheel drive truck.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, a little four-wheel drive SUV. That's that's nuts. Darn, that's respectable.
Bad. Yeah, that's not bad at all. So, yeah, I don't know what my next car is going to be, but I need something with a little bit of leg room, and I sure would like to get. I miss my truck dearly. I really do. I mean, I love my Prius, but I miss my truck. When I need my truck, I want my truck.
You just said it right there, sir.
Yeah.
You like your Prius. I like Wilson. And I hated my Chevy truck, and I miss it more now than ever before. Here's one. The one truck that gave me probably the most headache was my F-354 diesel, and I loved that truck. Hmm. To this day, I wish the hell I never got rid of that truck. And but, yeah, it's because I'm driving around in a car. I can't tell you how many times I'm like, oh, I can go pick up. Oh, no, I can't. I got a car. Or someone say, I got to move. Oh, we'll move. Oh, I can't. I got a car.
Yeah.
I am so crippled by not having the availability to throw shit in the bag.
Matter of fact, I want to tell you, you have even crippled my wife on that fact, because my boss has a freezer that is available, and he offered it up to us, and my wife didn't want it one particular time. Now she's changing her mind, and she says, oh, yeah, does he still have that available? I said, I don't know. I could ask him, but, you know, he lives down in Merrimack, you know, and he goes, I said, how am I going to get it up to the house? She goes, well, just borrow Joel's. I said, Joel doesn't have a truck anymore. Oh.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
That's why we still have a truck.
Yes.
Plus the fact that it gets 28 miles to the gallon. It's diesel, six-speed manual, six-passenger, and a full 8-foot bed with a cap on it. So I'm going to clean the garage out today. I can throw crap loads of stuff in this truck and haul it down to the transfer station. No big deal.
Yep.
Yeah.
I miss my truck.
I'm so tired of folding myself in half to get in and out of that damn car. And even when I'm in the car driving, I mean, first I smash the back of my head so many times because of the cold. Because, you know, you don't get in as slow as you should. Because, like we talked about last week, you can't get into a car by throwing one leg in the other. You sit on the seat sideways. You open the door, you sit like
I was just going to mention that.
Then you spin.
You spin your feet in.
You have to duck your head down to the right, and then you get one leg in, and then you have to try. And I've actually had to grab my friggin' pant leg and pull my other leg through the little teeny tiny hole and get into the car. And then you reach over, and then you slam the door, which closes a hole, which is about the size of, well, I don't know, about a thimble. And you're like, I just had to fold my big fat ass through this hole. And God help me if I ever get in an accident. Because I know EMTs and paramedics are going to run over to firefighters. I mean, even if it's a fender bender, they're going to
give me the
jaws of life just to get me the hell out of this and cut the roof off the car and crane me out because I won't fit through the hole. So, and that's if I got a hangnail. I mean, honestly, God. I am so tired of being crushed into a little car. And I'm like, you know, in my truck, I used to open the door. And guys used to think, well, why do you have a lift kit on your truck? Well, for two reasons. One, I don't have to step down to get into it.
Yes.
I have to step up to get into it. And when I got where I was going, I used to open the door and I literally would fall out of it. You know, you'd slide off the seat and your feet are on the ground. You had to fall down. Mm-hmm. No, you know, not getting into it didn't require stepping down. I had to actually hop up. And I love that.
My
I miss that.
My old 150, didn't have a lift kit in it, but it was the perfect size because, you know, you just kind of slid off the seat and you were standing. You didn't have to crawl down into the car.
You didn't have to duck your head sideways.
No. I could actually put the foot in first and then slide into the seat followed by and then just lift your foot up and get it in. Now I do the same thing. I call it the old man move. Because you go over, you open the door, you turn around so that you know your back's at the opening and you sit down, you know, duck your head, get it in, swing the first leg in, spend some time getting it around the steering wheel.
Exactly. And then if you got size 14 feet, then you got your feet smacking the pedals. Yeah. So you got to get your feet, and you got, what the Jesus Christ, and you get your feet. Okay, that one's there. Now, I only have one more leg to get. All right, baby, here we go. And you try and get this sucker in the little hole.
And then, heaven forbid you have a coat on.
Oh, no. The coat comes off before I even get in the car. I don't
care. People ask me why I don't wear a coat. And I say,
yeah, I often don't wear a coat.
It's much easier to get in and out of the vehicle that way.
Yes.
Much less driving.
First thing you do is take the coat off, throw it in the back seat. That's what I do. Take the coat off, throw it in the back seat.
Yep, and throw it in the back seat. And I actually have a car coat, which is a little fleece, a Columbia fleece that I wear.
Ah, that makes sense.
And it could be sub... Well, you have one too, but
yeah, that's true.
When it's sub-zero temperature, I leave my winter coat on the back seat of the car.
Yeah.
And I run like a fat man right out to the car with my fleece on. And get it, because I can get in and out of the car with that, and it keeps me relatively warm till the heat, you know, warms up.
Yeah. The fleece will keep you warm as long as you don't have to worry about wind. You know? And you don't have to worry about that inside a cool car, you know?
And just waiting for the heat for the air to warm up in it. So it's I wear my fleece while I'm driving, and I got my winter coat on the back seat as a just in case.
Yep.
You know, if it's really crazy cold, or if you got a flat tire and you got to change it, you put that on and your gloves and all of the you look like Nanook. But it's I miss my truck, and you know I used to bitch about the gas mileage. I said, oh man, this truck, Jesus, it's costing me $120 a week, $125 a week in gas back and forth. And I used to justify it. You guys heard? Oh, did I get there any faster? No. Was it any more luxurious? No, but and I have a new answer to that question. Yes, because I had leg room and I could stretch out and I was comfortable for the entire ride there, not going, oh God, my left knee's locking up because I can't stretch my friggin' legs out straight.
and when
I used to get out of my... Yeah.
Oh, and the other thing I really miss is when I was in my full-size F-150 truck, nothing special about it, you know, other cars feared me. Yeah. they kept their distance from me, you know, mm-hmm. which was nice. Now I'm one of the people that, you know, that stay away from those trucks.
Honestly, you know what? I have a running joke. What's the biggest fear of a yuppie asshole from Massachusetts driving a Lexus on the highways? What's their biggest fear?
A Ford F-150.
It's a guy wearing a baseball cap driving a 17-year-old pickup truck with primer and a headlight out. Because they see that truck coming down the road, they know our inspection laws are a little bit more lacking than Mass. And also, technically speaking, in New Hampshire, you're not required to have car insurance.
Yeah.
So you could be driving around in a 20-year-old pickup truck and with dents in it. I don't care if I get another one in it or not. It'll blend in with the rest. The yuppies just part right out of the way. Watch the Mercedes move.
Even worse, they see the...
You just come barreling the...
Even worse, they see the orange glow in the dark triangle on the back of it. With no license plate.
There's two things that make that... that's the creme de la creme of scares a yuppie. One, if it's got a gun rack in the back window.
I was about to say, you got to have the gun rack.
And two, if it's got one of those, you know, the big rig truckers, the naked lady mud flaps? You know, that's got the silhouette flapping at the back tires?
Yep.
Either that or with Yosemite Sam with the pistols. That scares all... They just part right out of the way because they know you don't care.
And blue balls hanging from the trailer hitch.
Going back to the farm days, before we had this truck, we called it Dino. Uh-huh. It's an old style. Well, actually, goes back a couple of trucks, but we used to have an old style Dodge pickup truck before they came up with the new body style. And we called it a Chrysler Saurus Rex. Dino. I don't remember what year it was, but 4-wheel drive, 3/4 ton.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I also had my Mitsubishi 4-wheel drive pickup truck that was definitely a farm work truck, but it was a Mitsubishi. Mm-hmm. If I took that Mitsubishi truck to the local hardware store lumberyard, I go back in the backyard there and it's like, oh, I'm looking for such and such. And the guy would just kind of look at me and go, that way. Mm-hmm. That was it, you know? I come back in the backyard there with my, you know, 150,000-mile Chrysler Saurus Rex, and they'd see this truck coming down there like, oh yeah, it's down this way, well, let's help you load it. And there's a whole different attitude from the people in the yard.
Yes,
this thing's made in the U.S. That Mitsubishi thing there is like, well, you know, it's actually a damn good truck. Yeah, it's that Mitsubishi. You must be a yuppie.
Yuppies drive them near foreign trucks.
Yeah.
Yep.
Jeez.
So that's why, honest to God, I'm looking at things and I'm saying to myself, I'm so sick and tired of being uncomfortable. I'm tired, you know, honest to God, I start weighing shit up and I'm saying to myself, and my whole Jeep dreams are gone. So I have to go back on diesel. I'm like, and if I'm going to go loud with a diesel, I'm going to go friggin' noxious. I'm going to put dual chrome stacks on it.
I was about to say, stacks with flappers and air brakes.
You gotcha. It's gonna have a Jake brake on it. It's gonna be a dually, and I'm gonna put tractor trailer size tires and rims on it with a lift kit. You know, if you're gonna stand out big. Go big or go home. So that's our edition of Bottom Gear. Wilson is broken, and I can fix it, but it's too damn cold, and I still want a truck.
So you got some other interesting news. I actually saw this on Facebook before you mentioned it.
Oh, yes. Well, I guess my beautiful bride must have posted it on her Facebook.
Yes,
but
she did.
I wish I had some Star Wars music, but I'll hum it. The full conversion is complete. You are now part of the dark side. She is a full Apple fangirl. She has an iPhone on the way.
Awesome.
Very cool.
So her turd droid, as I like to call it, finally decided that it didn't want to play ball with a bunch of little apps. And it was kudos to her. She's like, I'm sick and tired of not being able to get half the apps that I want with this stupid Android phone. And then always tells you, remount your SD card and blah, blah, blah. And she grabbed the bull by the horns and said, to hell with this. I'm buying an iPhone. And she went online and found herself an iPhone with a Mophie juice pack.
Oh, nice.
Case.
Cool.
Yep.
And
I had one of those on my iPhone 3, the Mophie.
Yeah.
And that worked nice. That was very nice.
She got a 4.
Okay.
Because she said, you know what? The 4 is going to more than do what I need it to do. And when I'm done you doing that, then I'll upgrade to whatever, 5 or what have you, 5C.
Yep.
But for the price, it was spot on. So she will be part of the iPhone family. So she'll have her Mac or iPad or iPhone. She's an iGirl.
She is an iSheeple.
She's an iSheeple.
She is an official iSheeple now. She has learned her. She has earned her I.
You guys, it's taken you guys how many years to convert me to the dark side of the force?
Yeah, no, it's the white side.
The white side.
Yes.
Exactly. And it's actually happened. Everybody in this house, including yours truly, has Apple devices of some kind or several.
Actually, it's the white side with an English accent. Which your wife can do, yeah. I can't do properly. So.
Exactly.
Yeah. Very cool. That's neat.
And you're right. So I'm happy. I'm giddy. Like, you know, I think I'm more excited for her than she is. Yeah. You know, because now you can do FaceTime and you can do all sorts of awesome things that you just can't do when they have a Turdroid.
That's right. Yep. Yep. So true.
Yeah. Run an ice cream sludge witch.
So people. We're going on 2.5 hours here.
Really?
Oh, this show's too long.
It's been fun.
So we better wrap this one up. We do have
this is two shows worth.
I know.
Wow, 2 hours.
Yeah, 2.5 hours, really. We do have a musical guest. It's Lisa Redford and her song, If We Meet Again. And... we'll be hearing from her after we say our goodbyes. And to the military people out there, thank you for what you do. And just you people, especially, you know, both CONUS and OCONUS, and especially the guys OCONUS, thanks for being out there doing the tough stuff and being in places you'd rather not be. And we hope you get home to your family and friends real soon. And until then, we'll keep the home fires burning for you.
We'll keep the fires and the files. We'll burn the files in the fire for you.
Yeah, keep them burning. And believe me, we enjoy the home fires right now with minus whatever degrees we've been having. So, with that, from the not so snowy and slightly warmer southwest corner of New Hampshire, I am Barry.
And from the southeast corner of New Hampshire, where it was a little drippy from the snow mountain, this is Joel.
And maybe in a couple of weeks you'll hear me splitting wood in here again. But for now, a nice, warm, cozy man cave. This is Michael, the Virtual Eeper.
And we'll see you next week for show number 127. Woohoo! Okay, we'll see you, everybody. But first, here's Lisa Redford.
I know you say we'll meet again. I know for you it's just as friends, no good for me. And if I ever see your face, it takes me back to that special place, that fateful day. I know that you don't care for me. Oh,
Samson, speak. Good boy.